As Washington fiddles, China's currency shines.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. The U.S. dollar today has steadied after recent declines amid signs the U.S. Senate might come up with a deal today to raise the federal debt ceiling and to reopen the government. This would force a stark choice in the House of Representatives, and that battle has yet to come. Meanwhile, the talk of the London Financial District today is new efforts to make Britain the big place to trade China's currency, which is an increasingly popular activity in an era where the dollar is hobbled by the ongoing fiscal and debt mess in Washington. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has more on London and the renminbi.
The measures were unveiled today by Britain's finance chief on a visit to Beijing. The aim is to facilitate business between London and China. There'll be a direct trading link between the British pound and the renminbi. London will become the first foreign centre allowed to invest directly in domestic Chinese stocks and bonds. Good for London, but it will also give the renminbi a bigger role as a reserve and a trading currency, says Standard Bank's strategist Steve Barrow.
It's going to take China a very, very long time to even get close to the US's dominance, but at the moment you have to say that's the direction in which it's heading.
He says the renminbi is now the world's ninth most actively traded currency. Having the number one slot brings the US enormous economic benefits, but Barrow says the shenanigans in Washington put that at risk.
Many perceive that the US policymakers are maybe throwing that advantage away and possibly even throwing it the way of China.
In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Now let's check the numbers. The FT 100 stock index in London is currently up 0.8%. Stock index futures for the U.S. are all up at the moment. In Geneva today, negotiators from the United States and five other countries will sit down with a delegation from Iran. They're working to resolve the standoff over Iran's nuclear program. For years, the international community has relied on economic sanctions to keep up the pressure. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler looks at the ongoing economic impact on everyday Iranians.
For Iranians at the bottom of the ladder, the economic situation makes it hard to eat. Hossein Askari is a professor of international business at George Washington University.
What you used to give to your family to fill them up was the little bit of meat and lots of potatoes. Now even potatoes have become expensive.
Inflation is rising, the value of Iran's currency has fallen, and unemployment stands around 20%. Suzanne Maloney with the Brookings Institution says the middle class have been hit hard.
Something like sending a student to university overseas, that's now totally out of reach for anyone except for the extremely wealthy or extremely well-connected.
But it's a different story for Iran's 1%. Again, Professor Hossein Askari.
For the very wealthy in Iran, they're not really affected at all.
That's because their wealth has been protected by rising real estate prices. Askari says the very rich in Tehran are still spending as much as $20 to $25 million for a penthouse apartment. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Now on to revenge as a management tool. A recent study from Ireland's University College Dublin finds that the vendetta, the sworn desire to get back at somebody, can help a person's performance in their job. The study looked at soccer players who were bitter after being traded and had vowed to get even. The data show those players tended to do better against their old teams than if the parting was amicable. Jason Voss is a former money manager who's now at the CFA Institute in New York and has himself tasted sweet revenge. Morning, Jason.
Good morning, David.
So revenge, it's such a heavy word, a sense of ruthlessness, anti when it comes to collaboration. It has a role in the workplace?
Well, absolutely. That ability to take dissonance and turn it into a positive force, you bet.
It motivates some people.
It motivates some people. I would count myself in that camp.
That's happened to you, though.
It has happened to me, yeah. In fact, when I was an investment manager back in the day, I was based in Santa Fe, yet our firm was a New York-based operation. And we felt particularly maligned by our New York colleagues. And when we complained about it to directors, they essentially said, let your performance be your revenge.
You felt disrespected by the fancy pants colleagues in New York City.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were frequently introduced by analysts who were lower down on the rung than we were as, oh, yes, they help out in Santa Fe.
So it didn't make you happy, but it fed into your motivation?
It absolutely did. Yeah, it was definitely a driving factor. And we brought it up all of the time.
And was the proof in the pudding? Did you perform?
It wouldn't be a story if it wasn't.
So you showed some good numbers out there in Santa Fe.
Yeah, most definitely did, especially relative to those New York colleagues who we were so frustrated with.
But revenge is such a negative emotion. It's destructive. It often is not something to aspire to.
Well, you know, I think it's what you do with it. It could be a positive force. In fact, where I'm working, we're trying to channel some of the outrage felt with the financial industry into a positive force for change. We have a thing called the Statement of Investor Rights, which is meant to empower the individual investor as he or she sits with opening a checking account or applying for a mortgage so that they're not taken advantage of.
Taking a negative but powerful emotion and using it as a catalyst for actually trying to make an improvement.
You bet. Otherwise, it just is a boil, right?
Indeed. Well, business is a dish best eaten cold, I guess, sometimes. Jason Voss with the CFA Institute, which charters financial analysts. Jason, thank you.
You bet.
And further proof that Apple may be less in the tech business and more in the fashion industry. Apple today says it's just hired the CEO of Burberry, the raincoat and luxury goods company from Britain, to become senior VP of Apple's retail operation. Already on staff is the former CEO of Yves Saint Laurent, who does special projects for Apple. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.